This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Alice Perryman from Pomedla, Texas. And you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December the 15th, episode 1587, brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference. Good morning, horse world.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
And welcome back to the Horses of the Morning Show, Alice.
Welcome to you too, Jen. Thank you.
I hear this wonderfully comforting little buzzing sound in the background. What is that?
That is my kitty, Sheba. She's a little black cat, about 4 months old, and she likes laps a lot. And she's laying here on me. I couldn't get up now if I had to. I've got one on my left and one on top of me and one on my right, and there's three more around here somewhere.
You're surrounded by purring kitties.
Right? And if I went outside, I'd be surrounded by barking dogs.
So. I'll take the purring kitties. Thank you very much.
I like them all. I don't know. Like I think I said before, I knew that Mike was the man when he was like, animals, bring them. He was like, awesome.
Well, everybody, in case you are not familiar with Alice, Alice is here the third Thursday of every month. Thank you very much to the NATRC. She comes by and we talk about all things trail riding, competitive and otherwise. And this time around, we have some all kind of really cool stuff we're talking about. In the NATRC front, we've got Marty Findley, and she's going to be talking about the upcoming annual convention. And they're thinking outside the box just a little bit. It's pretty cool. And then after the break, we're going to speak with Patty Hicks, and she's got a little bit of a wintertime adventure to tell us about. So that's what's coming up. And in the meanwhile, what has Alice been up to? And that doesn't include kitties.
Well, I think I started this process last month, but I've been moving from Bluffdale, Texas to Pomedla, Texas, and I'm getting horses situated, and I found a home for my young Arab for somebody who really is possibly interested in doing Tevis someday, which I will never do.
Exciting!
I know, and I just said, it's like he's just so scopey and athletic, and she is such a calm, quiet rider. I was like, these two would be perfect for each other. So I moved the horse I call Cass. His name is Crown Valiant. I moved him to a friend in San Angelo. And then a friend of a friend needed a home for her Tennessee Walker, which is what I've been moving more toward. So yesterday we went and picked up a horse named Joe Bob. Yes, his name is Joe Bob. he has a registered name, but Joe Bob is just really who he is.
That's perfect. I love it. Joe Bob.
He's a black. He's not like solid black like Sherman. He's kind of a roan, but he's not blue. So he's a black horse with some roany hairs, and he's got this big baldy face, and he was orphaned, so he does his a little funny, like he still like does his mouth like a baby to everybody, and he licks. He likes to lick hands, and one of my friends,
he has some identity issues, doesn't he? Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. And it's like she went out, you go outside and all you do is go, Joe Bob. And he just comes running like a dog.
Wow.
But they say he's a really nice ride. His poor owner has a hip problem and isn't able to ride anymore. She's hoping to get ponies and start driving.
That's a good idea.
She can't bear not to have horses.
There you go.
But they told her she could keep riding and need a hip replacement soon, or she could stop riding and have a hip replacement later. And she decided later was better than sooner.
Yeah.
So we've been rearranging horses and figuring out who gets along with who, and it's led me to my I blogged about this on my blog yesterday. It was analysis paralysis of feeding.
Oh, because no!
We have I'm embarrassed to say we have, I think, 8 horses between us, 8 equines between us, and they all need something a little different. Well, 2 of them, you know, when I had 3 or 4, I just fed them the same feed and I just fed varying amounts. But I have a couple, you know, I really can't afford to feed all the horses the $25 a bag Bluebonnet feed I was feeding, which is amazing. It's Bluebonnet Omega Force. Love this feed. Good energy. The horses look great on it. You know, like the harder keepers, I don't have to feed them a ton, but the easier keepers can have just a little and it not over, you know, doesn't overdo their system. But I'm trying to, you know, so like we went to the feed store because I haven't looked at feed in so long because I've been so happy. And there's all these choices. And, yeah. You know, there's the Country Acres 12-8 feed. And I'm like, well, so 12-8 is the formulation of the Omega Force, but it's $25 a bag and Country Acres is $12.50. I'm thinking Country Acres must not be as good as Bluebonnet. You know, call me crazy.
See,
but
that's the
like
problem. There are so many choices and it's so hard to analyze because you look at the big letters, which is what, you know, that's the sales part of the bag. You look at the big letters where it says 12-8. And then when you turn the bag over and look at the little letters, you go, well, that 12% protein is made up of crap versus the expensive ones made up of 12% proteins made up of, oh, good sources. Because a lot of people don't realize that it's crude numbers, not digestible numbers.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so.
And that just makes you want to pull your hair out, doesn't it?
Right. And then we have this young horse that is soon to be not a stud. And we separated him because he needed more food and he's a stud. And we had him by himself so he could eat better. Well, he quit eating and just then it got cold. And all of a sudden it's like, I've got this skinny horse that wasn't skinny a month ago.
Yeah.
And so we rearranged him but then the horse he likes or the mule is who he's with. But the mule doesn't need to eat anything. And she keeps taking his food. And so it's just like, but when I separate him to eat, he won't eat because he's alone.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's just a management night. I wish they were like the cows where you just, whatever.
Put a big old vat out there and they eat.
Yeah. It's just not that simple because the cows don't really fuss with each other. They all just gather around the hay bale and say, hey man, what's going on?
Hey dude.
I don't know. I just, you know, yeah. But, you know, they don't complain. They don't say, well, this hay isn't up to my normal standards. They just eat what you give them. And the horses just aren't like that.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting how they have a very different point of view? You hardly ever see a food aggressive cow.
Yeah. I know. Even the bull just stands around with the heifers and eats. You know, they don't argue. They were fussing at us last night because I was feeding the horses and not feeding them. But. You know, it's just now getting to be time to feed the cows. So,
Now,
but they're up by the horse park going, feed us.
Feed us now.
Feed us now. Yeah.
Now, do most of your guys come into separate pens or stalls to eat, or do most of them eat in a group situation?
Well, see, and that's part of the problem, too.
Oh, no!
Because at my old house, we had pens, and there was plenty of space. And I had, like, one pen I put all the old guys in because they ate about the same, and they were about the same level of aggression. And then I'd stick Sherman, who is very food aggressive, and another one of the Possifinos by themselves. And then I put Cass by himself because he would just pester everybody. And then, you know, so I had them separated out by amounts of food and temperament, and it worked. But now I haven't quite figured that out yet because I've got a couple of mare. I've got a baby and a mare. And so the baby needs to eat a lot and the mare doesn't eat anything. She's a halflinger cross and she's fat on scrub. You know, I've got Sherman who takes everybody's food. I've got Liberty who just wants to be left alone to eat, you know, and he was the boss of our old herd, but only by default because nobody else was. He doesn't want to argue with them. He's just like, fine, whatever, you take over. And so, you know, and then Vandy is just, he and Joe Bob are together right now because they're very, you know, they're very mild mannered and they kept switching buckets, but nobody was upset. So it's just, you know, I've still got 2 more I've got to bring from the other house. So
Oh dear.
So I may have more than eight.
Oh,
I try not to count.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've got plenty of spaces, and I can bring them in the yard. I can tie them to the trailer, and I just haven't worked out a system yet.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. The twice or three times a day or four times a day feeding routine has to feel efficient, or it makes you grumpy.
Well, I usually only feed once, but like right now, I'm trying to feed the colt more and the stud more, just because it's. You know, because one's young, they're both young, and they just need more calories. I think partly he went through a growth spurt too, so that was part of the problem.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get them separated out, and I've got a round pen, and we've got cattle pens. So I mean, when I get them all organized, I can shut them in separate pens. I can do it. I have to get them in a routine that they will follow. Because like at the other house, they would just all go up to the pens. They'd all go where they needed to go. I'd close all the gates. They'd bring out the feed. Worked out great.
Yeah.
And I just have to find a similar process for here. You know, it may be that Sherman gets to be with the mare who doesn't need to eat anything because she doesn't really need any food anyway.
Yeah.
So if he takes her food, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know.
You give him his bucket of high test chow and you give her a handful of alfalfa cubes and you're done.
Pretty much. And then she hovers and wishes she could have some more. And then she'll come back and clean up the ground after he's bored.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, see, you know. Scooter is that way about food, too. If there is a molecule, he will dig a hole to get to it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Sherman's definitely that way. You know, and the horse trailer's in the yard, so I can tie a couple to the trailer, and the baby can go eat out of her bucket in another corner. And I have a garden. Right now the garden is clearly not anything in it. I can put a horse in the garden.
You're so redneck. Put a horse in the garden. You know, it's going to fertilize though. It's going to stir up the soil. It's going to fertilize. It'll be great.
Oh yeah. Then we'll have oats growing in it. And that's the other thing.
Yes, exactly. You'll have oats growing in your garden.
I keep reading about how, you know, there's like this whole new movement again, new old movement of we should go back to whole feeds and just feed oats. And I'm thinking, really? Because, you know, we have these feeds that are more formulated for distance horses or trail horses or horses that choke or insulin resistant horses. Is oats really the best way to go? But
yeah,
I don't know.
Different strokes for different folks. I have a tendency to not use fortified feeds. I tend to go kind of I try to think of it as in whole ingredients. Instead of buying a feed that's got all of the ingredients at once, I have three or four ingredients that I can change the different ratios, like short fat pony and tall skinny thoroughbred need very different ratios of chow. But you know, there's a lot of thinking and there's a lot of little separate little tubs and all that stuff. So I get it that it's not for everybody. But on the other hand, you're probably going to end up with probably three different kinds of feed by the time you're all done and dusted to feed everybody what they need and still stay cost effective.
Well, see, and I've even thought about that because I know that I don't do much with it anymore, but I'm a Dynamite rep, so I get a lot of Dynamite products, and they have really good vitamin supplements for horses. And I used to do the whole, you know, cob, you know, I'd have corn oats and barley mixed. I guess it was in equal parts, if I remember correctly. You know, one to one ratio. And then you feed like a vitamin supplement for anything they're missing. And that seems really simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that seems like something I could feed to everyone in varying amounts. I just, I haven't done it.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that none of the distance people I know do. A lot of people, like one of our really successful riders, Johnny Jewell, doesn't feed hardly anything. They all have hay. They all, if they need feed, they get beet pulp. Another friend of mine, Betsy, who's a trimmer, she doesn't like beet pulp because it's so heavily fertilized for the sugar crop.
Yep.
And she doesn't like the chemicals in it. So she feeds soaked hay pellets, either Timothy or Timothy alfalfa, depends on what the horse needs. But she doesn't feed any grain at all.
Yeah. You're seeing more and more of that. Yeah.
There's just so many. And that's why I liked the Blue Bonnet, because it was beet pulp and it had some alfalfa and it had lots of omega-3s. And it was expensive, but it was easy. So, I mean, it may be that expensive but easy. And then other thing that I've never been able to figure out is omeline has been around forever.
Yep.
You know, that was the first thing I ever saw 30 years ago when I started riding, because I didn't start riding until I was an adult. And it's still around and it still sells well, but I don't know who omeline is for. Like, I know Mike. Well, like, Mike fed Omeline 300 to his colt because his colt was orphaned. And he fed that plus the 12-8 fat supplement because that's what the feed store told him because she would never do the milk replacer.
Mm-hmm.
And so he fed her Omeline 300 and then the Country Acres 12-8 and she looks great. You know, so it's like, I mean, she's 6 months old and she, you know, had a mom for about 6 weeks, but she's chubby as can be and looks really good. So, you know, it clearly didn't hurt her.
Yeah. Well, back in the day when they first created Omeline, there was only one. And now there's like six different formulas for all the different life stages and stuff. So even when you go with a basic, what we used to think of as your standard basic one size fits all feed, there's no such thing as this feed's good for everybody anymore. So
right.
It doesn't matter if you're using separate ingredients like I do, or if you're trying to use a fortified feed so that horse gets feed from this one bag like you do, there's still a lot of investigating and learning and reading and consternating and teeth crunching and hair pulling.
And if you ask 10 different people,
you'll get 10 different opinions.
Yeah. So what I'm curious what you do, like how do you taper yours? Like what do you mix together to taper for your fat pony and lanky thoroughbred?
They both have very much a forage-based diet, so it's lots and lots of hay. Scooter gets a small amount of coastal hay, which is very low everything. It's basically cardboard. There's not a lot of nutrients in there, but it keeps his guts happy because they need to chew.
Okay.
And then he also gets a small quantity, less than 5 pounds, of good quality Timothy orchard grass hay because he's a fussy eater. And what he will tend to do is not eat enough coastal to keep his guts happy, you know?
Right.
So
I love Timothy hay. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And he's fussy. So he won't eat late bloom Timothy. It has to be early bloom or second cutting, which is the most expensive thing you can buy in the United States. It's way more expensive than alfalfa, but alfalfa turns him into a raving maniac. So he gets that, and then he gets a ration balancing product in the winter. In the summer, he doesn't because he eats grass and he's fat. But in the winter, we feed him a product called Microphase, which is supplemental natural vitamin E plus essential minerals, and that's all that's in it. Yeah, and he does really well on that. And then Nigel gets enormous quantities of hay because he loves to eat and he's got a lot of guts to keep busy. And then he also gets beet pulp, and he gets alfalfa cubes and ground flax, and then he gets some vegetable oil to add a little bit of extra fat. And in the wintertime, when the grass dies out, he also gets oats. But he doesn't get that much. His total actual volume of feed, total volume, is probably 6 cups.
Huh.
It's not that much. The beet pulp, when you add a little bit of water to it, poofs up, but it's probably less than 2 pounds of feed a day. He gets very little grain.
Well, and I've liked beet pulp. I haven't worried too much about the insecticide load. I mean, maybe I should, but with all the other things I have to worry about, that's just, I can't. But Liberty, if you give him wet feed, unless you can find a way to secure a bucket, like all the way around, or feed in some sort of a non-tipping tub, it's everywhere. He hates wet feed. And to complicate matters, he will sometimes choke.
Oh.
So you need to feed him wet feed, but he doesn't like it.
Yeah. We have horse feeder, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. We reviewed it on one of the shows, so I'll put a link to it in our show notes today at the end of the show. What's it called? Rock? It makes me think of a Kewpie doll in that the bottom is weighted. And then the top has a lid.
Okay.
So they literally cannot knock it over. It is
That's cool.
Fabulous. All of the horses here at the farm have one. Every horse. We got one in a while back to do a review on the show.
Okay.
And we loved it so much because all the horses on the farm got to try it. We loved it so much, everybody bought one. And they're not cheap. They're like 40, 50 bucks or something. They're crazy expensive, but they are so sturdy and they literally cannot knock them over. And because of the lip at the top, you know how they tend to get a mouthful of food and then dribble it?
You know? Right.
Most of the dribbles go back into the feed tub. So
I will put
the link up there. I want to say Rock, Rocker feed tub. I mean, I'm going to Google because that's what we do.
Because I know Joe Bob has choked before and they had his slow feeder for him, but I don't even know what that looks like. I have to go find that.
There's a slow feeder. Yeah, it's called Prevent, P-R-E-V-E-N-T, I think it's called.
Okay.
Now, that one is easy to tip over, though, but it will keep them from consuming their food really fast. I've never had much luck with the old-fashioned put rocks in. It's never worked for me. They just tip the thing over and pour the rocks out.
See, and that's what makes me wonder if for the winter, while I'm trying to figure all this out, while nobody's really working, I may just go back to my whole, you know, alfalfa, or, you know, go back to my hay pellets and beet pulp with a little bit of omeline thrown in for fun and throw some oil in there, just make big mash. And it's so confusing. The whole thing is just, it just boggles my mind, you know, to try to make good choices for all my, and, you know, it may be that the ones who aren't really working just get inexpensive, you know, food, and the ones who are, that we're competing next year, get something a little fancier. That may be the answer.
There you go.
But so, then you feel bad. It's like feeding Roy when I was feeding Taste of the Wild before I was living in a house with six dogs. You know, it's like I feel so bad that they're getting McDonald's every day, you know, when they used to get steak or lamb.
Well, that's why don't we post that up on the Facebook, see if we can't get some feedback from other listeners and see what they do.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
I will do that. Yeah. And then everybody needs to answer instead of just liking it and saying, oh yeah, I like this subject. Please chime in. Answer.
Yeah. Put that over on the NATRC Facebook page.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, now the NATRC Facebook page, which is the national page, is North American Trail Ride Conference. And then I think it has a hyphen.
Well, it's just North American Trail Ride Conference. And then it's in parentheses.
NATRC.
For NATRC.
Yeah. And it's the one with the logo on it. That's makes it easy to find for me.
Yes.
Cool. Well, we've gabbed long enough. I think we'd better get to our first guest because we have some really interesting interviews going on today. This is going to be Marty Findlay. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Marty.
Marty Findlay is a NATRC rider from, I think she told me 22 years. I know I asked her that question in the interview, so if I have that number wrong, it'll be in there. But she started out riding and has kind of worked her way up to being the manager of the national convention this year. It's going to be held in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I have her in February. And so she's coming on to talk about the convention, and it's the dates of that are February 18th, I believe. It's the weekend just following Valentine's Day. And she's got a full slate of really interesting guests, and it will appeal to people who aren't just involved in the sport. It'll appeal to trail riders of all walks of life because there's so many really awesome people coming. But I will let her tell us about it.
Hello, Marty. This is Alice. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Alice. Glad to talk to you.
I'm glad to talk to you, too. First of all, I wanted to introduce Marty as being a member of our Region 5 region. Which states are included in Region 5?
Everything east of the Mississippi.
Well, that's a bunch of states.
That's a bunch of states, yeah. That's a lot of us. Primarily all the rides are Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina. That's pretty much where the rides are at this point in time. Now, we've had rides as far north as Canada, right across into New York. We've had rides in Philadelphia, and we used to have some rides in Kentucky. But what's happened is the region is so big, the distance to travel to a ride complicates it for most people.
I can see how that would be a real problem. I know I lived in Henderson, Kentucky for about 10 years. And I had been interested in NATRC when I lived in Iowa, but a bunch of the rides got flooded out that year. And so then I moved back to Kentucky and wanted to go, but looking at the map, they were all so far away that I never did get to do it until after I'd moved to Texas.
That's right. It seems like when we have tried to initiate rides more in more of the northern states, it seems like we wind up being a caravan. And we're moving 20, 30 riders in a caravan north. And sometimes, you know, one breaks down. You know what a community of NATRC folks is like. Three stay with them.
Right.
Two go back. You know, we wound up not being able to support, even when we were able to get ride managers north, we weren't able to support the ride well enough for them to continue.
Sure, and I know, too, that there are problems like in Kentucky when they had the rides at Land Between the Lakes. The local riders weren't very friendly toward the competitors and would sometimes pull ribbons and were sometimes bad. And you couldn't reserve the camp efficiently. People would come
but
in.
Well, we couldn't reserve. That's
right.
True. But the Kentucky folks were so welcoming, and they
well,
were the
good.
Ones who put on the ride. And they, it was great to be with the NATRC folks in Kentucky, a very strong group there, and they were coming to the Southern Rite. The problem was we couldn't reserve the spaces. So when we were in our campground, we're used to being together, and we wound up spread over these huge camping areas, and Trailhead was so far spread apart that we would lose contact with each other. And somehow it did. It became difficult to have that kind of unity that we're used to at an NATRC ride.
Sure, that makes sense. And unity of trail riders is what we are all coming together for in February for our national convention, which is hosted this year by Region 5. Can you tell us a little bit about how we split up, how the regions split up the convention and how the locations are determined?
Well, each region has an opportunity to present the national convention in a rotating basis, so we wind up presenting every 6 years because there are six regions. And this was our turn. The last convention was the 50th anniversary of NATRC, and we were delighted to be able to have that in Nashville.
That was my first one. That was the first convention I got to go. Oh, I loved it. It was great.
Well, yeah. We try really hard to have a serious party. We're trying to have a serious time to be together. We read about the names that are in each of the other regions, and it's an opportunity to put a face with the name. We read about horses that are the same breed as our own. Some of them have the same lineage, and then we get an opportunity to talk to these people. And it's, for me, it has been a real eye-opener to be able to go to the national convention and see that these folks who are listed at 6, 7, 8, 9,000 miles along with me, it's just nice to meet them. It's just nice to know the distance that they've drawn is the same thing I've ridden. And, well, it's sometimes it's a little bit tender to be able to be with folks that are part of the national organization. I've been in the organization 32 years. I started sort of my vet, hooked my trailer, put my horse in, threw in a bale of hay, and took me to Rockmart, Georgia, and unhooked the trailer, and there I was going to sit through the weekend or compete. I had a choice, and I chose to compete. I wasn't able to ride one day, but I learned so much in that one day, I decided to come back and to be vet secretary. So I secretaried for Jim Wright and Larry Bentley for 5 or 6 different rides, and by that time, I knew how to manage myself a little bit better at the ride and take care of my horse.
Sure. Well, and the convention's also good if you just like to trail ride. I mean, even if you don't have any actual interest in competing or you don't think you have interest in competing, there are so many different things to learn about trail riding and trails at the national convention.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us a few of the guests? I know I saw one with Angie McGee. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Angie, because I'm really excited to see her and to listen to her talk.
Well, a few years ago, I had the opportunity to meet her, and she was having a book signing, and I sat down for a few minutes and chatted with her, and I told her that her book had literally, it had taken my heart, because I was so amused by how much distance riding people make the same mistakes, eat the same food, do the same stupid things, and she was able to put it in a dialect that just, it took it away from being embarrassed to just made you more of the family to know that this is what people were going through. So she was one of the first people I contacted because, Alice, we're going to have a fun Friday. Friday is designed for fun. Angie's going to read some of the parts of the book that we can't even get in publication anymore, especially an article called The Sponge, which has been my favorite. She's going to read some of those. She's leaving her classroom. She lives right there in Chattanooga. She's a teacher. She's going, her students have encouraged her to do this. She's going to leave and come and speak on Friday morning. Friday's also a game day. I have created a Jeopardy game around NATRC, equine activities, different subject areas. And the regions are going to have a lighthearted competition for prizes for their region.
So I saw that it was the board of directors. Well, I saw it was the board of directors. So Gail and I need to study, it sounds like, since we're on the board of directors for Region 4.
The topics are some pretty general categories, and I'll share those now. And anybody that listens to Horses in the Morning will get a little head start. We're going to have NATRC history.
Okay.
Equine. We're going to have equine trivia. Equines from literature, war horses, and equine movie stars.
Ah, very
and
good.
Bam. So, you know, it's just supposed to be light. It's supposed to be for fun. I'll be showing a preview of what the whole weekend is going to have in store. Then on Friday afternoons, we're taking expeditions. You can join one of three expeditions because Chattanooga is just a beautiful place to spend time. That was the very first thing that we noticed about Chattanooga, was that it had so much to offer in the winter, so different from some of the other locations, even in the South. It draws you there in the winter. And so we have three expeditions planned. We have the Civil War trip, we have the Ruby Falls trip, and the Chattanooga Riverfront trip.
Wow.
And those are going to be available in the afternoon on Friday. And then on Friday night, Jean Abernathy, who was a friend that I met some 12 years ago, before she had written any of her books, she and I were together at a stable in Georgia. And she's an excellent cartoonist. And in the course of our time together, she shared with me that Fergus was becoming syndicated. Fergus is the name of the little horse she created. Well, she's written a book since then, and so I contacted her about 18 months ago, and I asked her how she would feel about writing a story about what it would be like for Fergus to attend his first NATRC ride. She jumped right on it. We've been working together. And so on Friday night, Fergus goes to his first NATRC ride through the story. And then we have a big patio at this hotel with fire, with fire pits. And Nancy Slides and her husband, who are part of an Appalachian music group, are going to play. And then we're going to have the fire pits, and we're going to have refreshments out there. And it's just going to be a time to have a good time, to meet people, talk to people, and be around like-minded equestrian lovers. That's Friday.
Going back to Fergus, did I read correctly that Fergus is going to be on our T-shirt this year for the convention?
Yes, Jean and I have created a Fergus cartoon on the back that sort of embodies, to me, what learning to be an NATRC trail rider, how it changes you. It is two panels. The first panel is your typical horse reaction to a misplaced rock on the trail, but she has created the rock to look like a dragon. And then, of course, all the people who are in her group are scattered and knocked and bumped around. The second one is like a before and after. And here comes the horse with confidence, and the riders are balanced, and that's on the back of the T-shirt. And then the front of the T-shirt has our Mind, Body, and Soul logo, which is that's the driving force that has gotten this whole convention together. You asked me, how did I get involved in this? And I was at my barn, and I have this plaque on the wall that says, "Bread may feed my body, but my horse feeds my soul." And I had just come back from the convention in Reno and was trying to think of a hook that I could use to get our board of directors and all the people that I knew that would be willing to work with me on this convention, how we could get involved. And that's the direction we decided to go in. The mind, body, and soul of the rider. we can go to other areas at other times about how to do our turns on the forehand and various riding things that we have learned to do. There's a lot of horsemanship information available to us. And this is about the rider. We're going to have four very important speakers on Saturday. The first one, first thing I wanted to be sure that you knew about was Beth Glosson. She is an MD, and she wrote a book called The Riding Doctrine. And this year when I lost my gated horse and was fortunate enough to be given an Arab to ride, it had been 5 years since I had ridden a trotting horse, and it was taking its toll on my body. So I brought her book home and began to read and follow and look at everything that was being printed in there, her exercises, all of her suggestions. And I was working with my horse on the ground at the time. And then I decided to take him on out and let's just do this thing. So we started competing, and I was amazed at how the exercises that she had me do through her book were making such a big difference in my riding. So I called her. I said, this is who I am, and I'm putting together a program for a national organization. I would like for you to go to the NATRC website. I gave it to her so that I knew she would get there without any problems. And she called me back, and she said, I'm very interested. And so we worked things out so that I could actually have the equipment for her at the program in Chattanooga. She'll have the exercise equipment, and she'll be able to show you, like, her pre-mount exercises and things that really do make a difference, Alice. They really do.
Does she have some hints on how to keep us from being too sore? Because that's something I continue to fight. I've been doing these competitions and trail riding long distance for fun since about 2002 now, and I still suffer from just terrible soreness after I ride for a whole weekend. And I'm actually switching from I'm switching from an Arab to gated horses, so I'm kind of going the other direction. But even then, you still get a little bit sore just because if you're light and balanced, you know, which is the key word of the day, it seems like, is light and balanced, then, you know, you're putting a lot more weight in your calf or your quadriceps, so, you know, you end up being a little more sore. But if there's some way of not being sore, I'm all over that.
Well, I'm not going to guarantee that you won't be sore, but this I will promise you. It will give you a different kind of stretch that seems to work better for equestrians than anything I've ever tried before. I go to yoga. I have a chiropractic adjustment. I have done the acupuncture. I've tried everything to keep myself in good physical condition to ride, and this has been the best that I've ever tried. I'll give you an example of one. Exercise ball, metronome, and you begin your rhythm with your metronome on your exercise ball. Sounds easy to start with, right, Alice?
Well, no, not really. I mean, metronomes make life more complicated. For people who don't know, a metronome is typically used in music, and it helps you keep your beat whenever you're practicing, like the piano or in band, so that everybody stays in the same rhythm. And
right.
You can use a metronome to help you with your gait, riding your horse at a gait or at a trot, so that you're making sure that you're rating that horse accurately.
Actually, that is a perfect example, wonderful example. What I did was put an app on my phone so that I had a metronome on my phone. I know exactly how many beats it is, and I started working with the metronome, and then working with the horse. And the metronome's in my pocket. And I am able to push that horse into a rhythm that I can keep him at a nice, steady rhythm. In my opinion, I'm not sure I took this from the book, it's not the muscles that you use that are balanced and in rhythm. It seems to be those times when the horse gets you and uses a muscle when you're not together with him. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me.
Okay, well, that's where that's where I am beginning to use the exercises that she's presented, and I've just been very pleased. And I wanted to share that with everybody.
What is her name again?
Her name is Beth Glosson. She's an MD, author, The Writing Doctor.
Can you get that book on Amazon? I may have to go look for that before the convention.
Yeah, yes, she can.
Cool.
And she's going to bring some with her, I think. I think what I asked her to do was send us some. Send them on to the hotel. So she'll have some there.
Well, we can bring them and she can sign them for us.
Yeah. Then Cherie Jeffcoat's going to speak. She's going to be a humorous moment, I believe. I think she's going to talk to us about wrapping your mind around trail obstacles.
I thought maybe she was going to
prepare your mind.
I thought maybe she was going to tell us we needed to be sure we had on our big girl panties.
Well, she may do that too. She may do that too. I have a rider in my region, Sergeant Andrew Murray, who is working with his department to establish a large animal rescue division. And I was in a situation where I didn't know what to do when my horse was in trouble. And I proposed that to my committee. And they said, what we need to do is get someone who comes and speaks about the things that we don't know what to do about in an emergency with the horse. We all know how to do a few basic things. We all understand about our colic. We understand the things that we have experienced. It's the things that happened to us that we didn't expect or we weren't prepared for that I wanted the members who come to this convention to get some head start on. What to do when your horse is in a bog. Because we had a horse get into a bog and the rider assumed that pulling on the head was the best way to help the horse get out. And then we had someone who was trained in how to remove an animal, a large animal, who put a rope behind his butt, and she and another person were able to get the horse out of the bog. And what she shared with us at the ride briefing, she was the safety rider at that ride, and what she shared with us at the ride briefing that afternoon pointed out to us that sometimes your first instinct is not the best thing to do when you're in a crisis situation with your horse. So Andrew is going to take us through a session about what to do in situations, and that'll be a question and answer time too. So that's one of my speakers. And
sounds like we've got a really full agenda.
It is. And then Becky Pearman, who is a renowned equine photographer from North Carolina, is going to share with us how to look at your horse through the camera to get the best picture that you can, to get through your mind's eye, to be able to see the horse in his best light, things that you can do to make your photography of your horse as attractive as you feel like it is in your soul.
Well, and that'll come in handy for everyone, like at competitions or casual trail rides, when we're out with our friends and we want to take the very best picture we can with our little camera or our phone or whatever, help and frame it, you know, because we don't always have the opportunity to have a professional photographer close by.
That's right. The last thing on Saturday afternoon, it occurred to all of us in Region 5 as February came around last year that there's a lot of new people who don't know the history of this sport. And so the last part of the afternoon is going to be a collection of conversation and history. Kim Cowart and Lori DiNatale will both be there sharing some things that have changed and how we change things, how in our sport we don't just randomly make a decision that from now on you can't use green halters. I'll use that as an example. things have to go through a process of trial and error where we really try to look at both sides of things. They're going to share with a lot of our newer people how things have evolved, because there was
right.
a time when we couldn't use paste electrolytes in ATRC, and now that's a fairly common procedure.
Right, and that would be really useful for all the folks that think, you know, the people you hear say, oh, in ATRC, they have too many rules or they have this or they have that. Maybe 40 years ago it was one way, but things have evolved through the years to make more sense to us as a sport and us as trail riders. Well, real quick, before we wrap it up, I want to ask you some questions, just some random questions about your own horse. I know that you unfortunately lost Prime Sensation, but you said you knew how an Arab. What's your new horse's name?
His name is the Vandal, and he was a gift from Stephanie Ostrowski, one of our judges. He is a whole different goer from what I was doing before with Prime. And Vandal and I have a different kind of relationship, and he is, he's quite a nice horse, and I'm very grateful to my whole NATRC family for thinking enough of me to keep me involved by keeping an equestrian attitude and a horse up here for me to work with. I'm very grateful to Stephanie for that.
So what would he tell you about himself if he could talk?
I want to be with you on my terms. I want to be with you all the time. I want to be right next to you, but I want you to move over. I don't want to move over. You move over.
So he's a little pushy.
He's a little pushy, yes, but, you know, he's big. He's much bigger than any horse I've ever had out here, and he's quite handsome, and he knows. He knows he's a pretty boy, and so he's, but he also wants to be with me enough that he will listen. He listens. He's got a nice attitude about the trail. He hasn't met anything on the trail yet. And see, I ride alone. I don't have a lot of friends that can do the kind of distance we do, Alice.
Yeah.
I have, most of my friends belong to a club called 2 Hours is Enough.
And thanks again, Marty. The NATRC is really thinking outside the box for this convention. And that is so cool because, like you said, it's going to appeal to members, non-members, potential members, former members, anybody who's interested in riding in the open with their horse and learning more about being a better horseman is going to get a lot out of this. So tell us again where folks can learn more about the convention. Where do they need to go?
Okay, well, there is a website. That is NATRCNC.com. And there's, of course, also a Facebook page. If you type in North American Trail Ride Conference, I think the first thing that pops up is National Convention 2017. And you can go there to learn more, too.
Cool. All right.
I know I'm super excited about it.
Really
I can.
Cool.
I've already got my plane ticket to my hotel and everything. So I'm ready to go.
You're ready to go. Well, let's take a little break and listen to a little bit of Marianne Kennedy, and then we're going to be back with Patty.
Lost and so alone, looking for someone to call your own. Then right before your eyes, an open heart wants to be your home. Unwanted, unneeded, now there is love. Change in just one day. No matter who you are, life is better when you share the way. Who rescued? Who needed more? Who saved who? To the world it looks like I saved you.
Marianne Kennedy. You can find her music at mariannekennedy.com, and she is also on CD Baby and iTunes. And now this show being brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference. Thank you very much with Alice Perryman, who is coming up next that we're going to chat with.
We are going to chat with Patty Hicks, who is a longtime trail rider and barrel racer. She has been competing in NATRC since 2003, and her husband also is a volunteer for our sport. They frequently spend holidays away from home because their family is kind of scattered. And she's going to tell us about one of their most exciting wintertime riding adventures that took place over at Christmas. Welcome, Patty. Good morning.
Good morning. It's nice to talk to you today, Alice.
I understand that you and your husband have made it a tradition to camp and ride a lot over the holidays, like Christmas and Thanksgiving. Is that correct?
That's correct, and the reason why is because he works away from home, out of state quite a bit, and so we have to spend time together when we're off work and home, and I work as well, and I'm off on holiday, and so we, our children work away, have worked away from home, and oftentimes on holidays, we can't all get together, so we would celebrate at a different date, the week before, the week after, whenever we could get the family or as much of the family together. And so my husband and I decided that holidays shouldn't be stressful, be fun, and we started going camping with the horses and riding.
Well, that sounds like a blast.
It can be interesting. I can recall one time in particular that was on a Christmas, if you want to hear about that story.
Absolutely. Since it's December and Christmas is just around the corner. Where did you guys go?
Well, we went to Cedar Lake, which is in southeast Oklahoma. It's one of our favorite places to ride. It has a great camp and a very large trail system. There's a particular trail that goes over what's called Snake Ridge, and it has a beautiful view looking out over the countryside, the hills and the mountains, and it's a photo op. There's been a million pictures there. Everybody that rides there takes a picture on Snake Ridge. And I had often remarked how beautiful it would be in the snow. And Ronald thought I was crazy wanting to ride up there in the snow. And I'm like, well, it would be pretty. So we left out, I think it was about 8 o'clock when we left. And it's normally takes us about 4 hours to get up there. And so we're just, you know, we're driving. It's cold. It was probably, I want to say around 28 or 30 degrees, around somewhere around there. Well, when we got to Highway 63, we started seeing snow. And the further, you know, we crossed it, and the further we go, we start to climb a little bit. Snow's a lot heavier on the, looking up the sides of the hills, and Ronald's looking up the sides of the mountains, you know, going, look at the snow. Well, I'm driving. So I'm looking ahead of us at the road. And as we start to climb, the road's getting more and more snowier. And I finally said, Ronald, I mean, like, look here at the road. This is a little scary. And so he looks in front of us, and it's getting really snowy. And without saying a word, he just reaches over and pulls the foot down the four-wheel drive. So that's when I kind of get the white knuckle. And so I'm thinking, well, when we get to the top of the pass, there's Three Sticks Monument, and there's a big pull over there. And there's it's one of those things, they have it where the trucks stop and check their books. And, you know, it's an overlook, and I'm thinking, well, worst case scenario, when we get to the top, we can pull over at Three Sticks and get the roof turned around, and we can go back down, you know. And so we finally get up to the top, and you can't pull into the pullover, the brake checking area.
Right.
It is just, I mean, covered in deep snow and ice. And there's three snow plows sitting up there at the monument.
Oh, dear.
And actually, they had just opened the pass. The snow plows had come up from the other side and were taking down barricades because that road had all been closed.
Oh, and you guys hadn't known it was closed because you'd been listening to music and there was just nothing about it on the radio.
And we didn't realize that the storm had come all the way across the state. And so, like I said, once we got up, we were committed. And the road, they had cleared the road, which, you know, it's still kind of snow patches and so forth, but it was safe to go down. And so that's when you start down. And it's, I don't know what the grade is, maybe 7%. It's a pretty steep grade and pretty, you know, windy, and it's a real slow going. About 20 miles per hour is about the fastest you'll want to take any of it. And so we get down that, and then you cross over where the Talamanca-Sing Byway is, and 259 has one more little kind of up and down, and then you're out on back into the flat, you know, regular driving. So we head on, and it is absolutely beautiful, though. The snow is just, because there were probably 6 inches at least or better, which is a good bit of snow for us.
So when you got to camp, was there anybody else there?
Well, let's go back on phone just a minute. I forgot to mention, when we topped over the top of the pass, the thermometer in the truck read 16 degrees.
Oh, burr.
So it's we get on into camp. And so we pulled on in and pulled in one of the pull kind of easy to, you know, like I said, just really, really snowy. And the pins were kind of up on the hill, which I thought would be better for the horses. And so we just left the horses in the trailer, and it was like 22 degrees, I think, or 23, and went ahead and got the trailer set up and hooked up because we were worried about it freezing, the lines freezing,
right?
And we wanted to get the heat on, you know. And so, anyhow, we got the horses out and, you know, and put them up, and the dog had a blast playing, so it was beautiful. The next morning we got up, and it was 23 degrees. And so we headed out, and at that time, our dog Camo was much, much younger.
I'm sorry, how many miles did you say you cut out right when you told me how many miles?
I think it's about 20 round trips.
Okay.
It might be a little over. It's one of the longer trails down there. And, of course, you've got to realize it's rocky, it's slow, it's technical.
Right.
And so we left out on our horses, and our dog Camo was going with us, and, you know, it was just pristine, just as, you know, white. We would see tracks from deer and the wildlife, but it was just like a Christmas card, just like what you see in a Christmas card with the snow on the trees and all. It was so pretty. And there's a creek you have to cross on that trail, right not far out of camp. and that was a cold creek, and it was about belly deep on the horses.
Oh, wow.
And when the dog went through there and came out, all of her fur just froze into icicles, like almost immediately. It was kind of funny. And we rode and got on up on top of winding stair up to the campground there, and we tied the horses up and walked out. We hadn't been up. We'd been up there in the vehicle, but we hadn't ridden up there. So we walked out, and it was cold up there on the byway. The wind, you know, was blowing, and we were out of the trees, so the wind was hitting us. And we took some pictures with the sign, you know, proved we were there in the snow, and it was really cold. And so we started back down, and it's steep when you go down. That 3 miles of trail is climbing the mountain. And it has terraces just layered across it. So we were leading the horses. Rob's in front of me. We got off on some yellow paint markings and kind of wandered around and realized that we were not on the trail. That was a little scary for me.
Yeah. Because, you know, you're going to run out of daylight and it's cold and it's windy, and that would not be good.
You're up on a mountain in the snow, exactly, right, along with some camp. So I said, okay, let's just stop a minute. And we did, and we traced our steps back until we got to where we had got off trail. And then I used the breadcrumb feature on my GPS to get us back where we were supposed to be. We followed it back and finally got back on the right trail to head back down the mountain. And then we decided we'd get back on the horses and ride. So we were getting tired.
Yeah.
Into the snow.
Well, yeah, that'll wear you out quick.
Right. And so we decided to ride back down the way we had came instead of taking the trail that would, you know, make it a whole loop, because the trail 5 that would loop back around is a pretty rough trail, pretty tough to ride. So we're in trail 6 going up, you travel some Forest Service roads and some gravel roads, so it's a little bit easier. So we went back down the way we came, and when we got to the Holson Valley Road, instead of crossing it and continuing on the trail, we decided to ride up the road back to camp, because it would be faster. Because it was getting late by then. And it was about 3 o'clock when we got back to camp. We left about 8 that morning. And so it wasn't going to be long, you know, until it got dark on us.
And so what do you like? What do you like to ride in when you're riding in cold weather like that? What kind of clothes do you like to wear?
I have the riding breeches that are the winter ones that have the fleece inside them. They're thermal riding breeches. And then insulated waterproof lace-up boots and thermal socks. And then I layer with a base layer. And then usually I like to put a fleece vest on over my shirt and zip it up to keep my core warm, and then coat over that.
So that gives you a lot of different layers.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we really didn't get cold until we came down the highway into the wind. And when we got back to camp, it was still 23 degrees. It was 23
wow.
when we left and 23 when we got back. But that was kind of the only time we got cold.
So did you, but how many days did you stay? I mean, was the snow melting by the time you all left, or?
Yeah, we stayed 3 days. The next day, of course, I wanted to go up to Snake Ridge because I'd always wanted to see it in the snow. And so we took, that's a shorter, you can make that into a shorter loop. And we did that and rode up there, and it was just beautiful in the snow, and it was probably the prettiest thing that I have ever ridden, I think, to be in that type of terrain and with about 6 or 8 inches of snow.
Well, it sounds awesome. That sounds like something I would enjoy doing, except poor Mike doesn't really like the snow so much, but the cold.
I don't either, but that was worth going, and we have both agreed that trip, a lot of people thought we were crazy, but that was truly worth going.
Thank you so much, Patty, for being on today's show. That was quite an adventure.
Now, there's lots coming up on the ride calendar yet this year. What's going on?
Well, actually, not this year exactly.
Well,
we're kind of in a lull at the moment.
How about next year?
Next year. Well, okay. We're going to talk about next year. We did have a competition. There were two competitions the first week of December. There was one in Florida, and there was one in Texas. And they were... Yeah, we'd had beautiful weather up until the one in Texas, and then it just sort of all fell apart, which seems to happen. often, but I think the Florida one had pretty weather. And I think there's a ride in January in Florida. I am looking at the calendar to make sure.
Yeah, there is. I think it's up in the panhandle.
I think so, too. You can double-check the ride calendar at natrc.org and then click on rides. Yes, the next ride up is there's one in Arizona and one in Florida. January 16th and 17th in Arizona at the Santan area. It's the Santan area CTR. And there is one in Florida, the 28th and 29th of January. And then we have our national convention, February 17th and 18th. And then in March, things kind of get going more normally. And then we'll be busy every weekend riding somewhere.
Cool. Well, if you would like to get information about today's show, go to horsesinthemorning.com. And you can follow Horses in the Morning on the Facebook. That's where we get lots of interactions, suggestions for the show, and we put links to things there. Just search for Horses in the Morning. And if you're one of those people who likes to live your life 150 characters or less, our Twitter handle is Horse Radio. And you can also have the shows with you everywhere you go because you always have your phone on you. So you can go to your iPhone or Android app store and search Horse Radio Network and download our app. It's quick, it's free, and it's easy. And you can also subscribe via iTunes. And thank you one more time to the NATRC for providing Alice to us on the third Thursday of every month to do our special trail riding episode. And we'll see you again in the new year, Alice.
All right. We'll see you. Have a Merry Christmas.